You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Matt Chandler, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the New Churches Podcast, and today we're talking about building a team out for your new church, and we've got some excellent qualified guests with us today. We got Jamie LaMotto, and Todd, man, you don't know this, Jamie and I got history.
Long history.
Yeah, we first met, I met Jamie's wife. She was at my sending church when I was getting ready to go out and plant. She was walking through the building, touring it. Trying to find out if she could rent it for a school. And I was giving her the tour and she asked what I was doing. I said, I'm about to plant a church. And she said, oh, my husband's interested in that, but our church is not supportive of that. And I said, well, have your husband call me.
Buffalo Wild Wings.
Me and Jamie got together and had some chicken wings and the rest is history. He quit his job and he basically abandoned his whole life to come and be a part of our little tiny church plant. And God used him to help build our church. Mm-hmm. And then he was one of our first church planters we sent out. So lots of history with Jamie.
It was a scary day. Yeah.
It was a scary day. It was particularly scary because he had never been to our church. He didn't know how small it was. Mm-hmm. And then he showed up and he thought he had wrecked his whole life when he first laid eyes on it. but anyway, Jamie now is the lead pastor over at Mosaic Church in Winchester. It's a relatively new role for him. And he's the regional equipper for the North American Mission Board for the Northeast United States. Jamie's passionate about multiplication. He's passionate about raising up leaders to plant churches everywhere for everyone. He's married. He's got four kids. His wife, Jessica, is incredible. And then Todd is the director of Lifeway Leadership and over at Lifeway Christian Resources. And prior to Lifeway, Todd was an executive pastor at McLean Bible Church, a mega church in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. And he's passionate about building armies, not just audiences. Todd and his wife also have four children. So today we're going to be talking, like I said, about building a team for your new church. So Jamie, there's a lot of confusion around core teams and launch teams. There's, mm-hmm. The language sometimes gets muddled together. People think you're talking about the same thing. And sometimes maybe there's confused about that. Even church planners that I interact with, there's a lot of confusion around core teams and launch teams. Can you help us differentiate that in any way?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would see the core as these are the people that I'm doing life and mission with. These are the people who the 12 to 20 people that if I had all the money in the world, I would hire them on my staff. There are some church planners who have the ability to raise that kind of money and do that. I was not one of those people. So it was asking these people to come do it for free, but I definitely would have hired them. And in the end, did some of those core team members. And then the launch team is what those people who are going to help us, those 50 to 100 people that are going to help us launch the Sunday service, they're going to be the volunteer force that help us to get the thing off the ground. And what I found is a lot of times those launch team members are like scaffolding. As the building gets built and as the organization begins to take root, sometimes those launch team members maybe come from your sending church. They come from other partner churches, and then they come and help you launch, and then they go back. Similar to when you're building a building, you put the scaffolding up, and then eventually the scaffolding has to come down. And so that's how I would differentiate between the two, the core team and the launch team.
Yeah, that's super helpful. So the core team is that innermost core, and then the launch team is the folks that helping build, helping support those core team members a lot of times. So Todd, one of the biggest barriers that church planners often face is recruiting people into a team when there's really no momentum with the team. You know, there's for a church plant, there's really, nothing going for it many times. They're going to plant in an area or a city where it's hard to imagine a church being rooted or planted there. So how can a church planter talk to prospective team members without sounding like a used car salesman, but engage them in a compelling way with the vision of their work. From a leadership standpoint, what should a church planter be tapping into to help them recruit somebody when there's really nothing to show for their ministry?
I mean, the way to make it as compelling as possible is to make it as clear as possible. In this stage of the game, you know, that clear and compelling vision is your currency, because you don't have anything, you don't have any money to offer at this point. Even if you're well healed as a planter for some reason, you still can't buy your way to the church you want. You want to build your way to the church you want. And so this is where you go. I mean, it, the higher, higher level of competency and capacity leaders that you are trying to recruit, the more important clarity is, because they are going to dig down into the layers of what you just said, not just take your word for face value on, we're going to launch, you know, we're going to launch a church in 3 years. I don't know why I said that, but we're going to go with it. They're going to want to know how you plan on doing that. What things are you going to put into place? They're going to ask more questions. And the best thing to do is answer their question before they ask it, so that they know, oh, this person is well thought out. They know where they're going. And this sounds really compelling. I know what my next step is, or what our first steps are, because they've outlined it so well. There's not a hanging question mark there. There's not a lack of confidence or comfort because the planter wasn't clear. There's enough lack of confidence. There's enough lack of, yeah, of those things, even if the planter is clear. So don't sacrifice shrinking that delta as much as possible by being clear.
Clint, I've heard you talk about the Swiss cheese method and the grid method of gathering a team. Help us understand how that plays into this whole idea of core teams, launch teams, and that picture that you've given before.
Yeah. It's a little hard without having visuals on a podcast, but imagine a piece of Swiss cheese. You know, you've got, you know, this sort of square border and these different size and shaped holes throughout the cheese. I think of that kind of like the way most church planters approach building their team. They basically say, who wants to be on my team? And then, like, you got Sally that joins the team, and she really likes to play the ukulele, and she, you know, she's passionate about children's ministry. So she's got this like unique shape, you know, and she, so it's like, okay, we have Sally. So she's got to fit into this thing. So she becomes like a hole in the Swiss cheese. And then you got, you know, Jim, who's my father-in-law, and he's on the team because the family's associated. Maybe he's a mechanic and a good old boy. Maybe he could work on a soundboard. You know, it's just like you got all these people that are like these odd shapes. They're not. So instead of saying, here's what we need for this organization to thrive, we say, what do we have? And then we end up with all these gaps all throughout the organization that are oddly shaped. Mm-hmm. It's hard to find somebody who could fit in that thing because it's not a square box. Where I think it's better if you have take sort of a grid approach before you start recruiting your team. And the grid approach would be basically draw a tic-tac-toe board and then say, what do we need in this new church? Well, we need kids ministry. We need the preaching to be great on Sunday mornings. We need the worship to be good. We need to have a robust prayer ministry or prayer approach. We need to dedicate time in prayer. We need to have good IT. We need to have good web presence. We need to have good marketing, you know, the various things that the church is going to need to do. And then I can go out and recruit core team members that squarely fit those boxes. Or even if somebody doesn't squarely fit the box, let's say I do go out and recruit Sally, and Sally has some of the gifts for that box, but not all of them. Now I know what I need to develop Sally in, and I can recruit Sally into a situation where I say, hey, Sally, I need you to do this. I realize you have some of the skills right now and you don't have some of the skills. I'm going to come alongside you and make sure you have the equipping that you need to be able to do all the things in this box, not just the things that you're naturally inclined to do or feel good at right now. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is the way, really, guys. I mean, that's the way anybody would start any organization. I don't know why church plants do it differently. You know, mm-hmm. we take like the Craigslist approach. I remember literally when I was planting, We had a need for a drummer and we couldn't find a drummer. We had nobody in the congregation. I didn't know a drummer. And I'd asked every other church in the area if they'd donate their drummer and I could not find a drummer. I literally went to the extent to put an ad on Craigslist, for a drummer. And it was if you want to hear the story sometime, it was a debacle, but you know, putting it out there in a way like that, just letting people recruiting broadly without specifically going to people and saying, you have the gifts for this thing I want to invite you into, and I think is a big mistake. So
the more that you allow to happen, the more you say yes to, the more you're diluting your vision and mission and everything else down the road. So everything has an opportunity cost. Anything you say yes to is not just yes, a one-time right. Yes, and we'll see how it goes. That's not what's happening here. You're setting a precedent. And that precedent carried forward can grow out of control. It's like, you know, kudzu. You think, oh, that actually looks pretty good there. And then, you know, you come back in 2 years and the whole road is covered in kudzu on both sides of the road. And you're like, how did we get here? Well, if we reverse engineer it, we said yes to too much too early. Again, that's with that whole idea of inertia of success. As soon as you're successful, as soon as you have any margin, people are going to want to take advantage of that or launch their pet project or whatever. And we just have to be. We have to be vigilant about saying no to a lot of different things. The other thing that does is it helps create and cultivate the culture that you want. What you say no to and what you say yes to is the most powerful thing you have early on in setting culture. It's not what you preach. That's important. But people are going to see what you do more than hear what you say. So you need to make sure that what we do as a church is very much in alignment with what we say and where we want to go. We can't just say, hey, this is where we want to go and say that's where we want to go. That whole idea of poetry and plumbing comes into play again. It's great to cast a compelling vision, but you have to deliver on the dream. And it's a lot easier to deliver on the dream if you're very, very clear. And you say no to anything that does not conform with where you want to go.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. Jamie, when I think about you and your expertise, what you're really good at, a couple things come to mind. Coaching is one of the first ones. You've spent much of your career helping to coach church planters and helping coaches, other people become coaches for church planters. And most of your experience is in church planting. So what do you think that the average pastor who's building a team needs to know about coaching when he's thinking about his own team?
When I think back in my experience of church planting prior to getting involved in being trained as a coach and training other leaders as coaches for church planters is I did a lot of talking and not a lot of listening. And I think a lot of church planters would serve their team well to ask questions about what can you celebrate and then begin to listen. What are the things that they're talking about? So I think about the things that Todd shared just a little bit ago about whether or not that person could be placed on a particular team because they are living out the values and the vision that you have. And I think we don't know that unless we ask questions and we listen. And we ask the question, what can you celebrate? And then we begin to ask the question, what would be most important for us to talk about today? So when I was planting the church that I planted and we had worship leaders, I would step into that weekly worship meeting and say to them, hey, you've been hired to do a job. What would be most important for us to talk about today? And if it wasn't around worship and it wasn't around leading people and it wasn't around growing the people that they had been called to lead, then I knew I needed to then step in and then begin to encourage and admonish and correct. But if I would just stop long enough to listen and ask the question, what would be most important for us to talk about today? They actually would give me the agenda. They would give me the agenda for my team meeting. And so now the stress on me figuring out what would be the most important thing for us to talk about is now off of me, and it's on them. And now they're taking ownership. And so, and then my responsibility was then to follow up with them. Did they actually follow through with the action steps that they said were most important? And so leading as a coach for me moved ownership for every single problem from me, and them being dependent upon me to them taking ownership and them taking responsibility. Wow. And now it was shared leadership.
That's a key distinction, Jamie. And I think for a lot of pastors, it's a little scary to move the ownership off of your shoulders, because that's what makes you viable or useful or essential in the work. And so it sort of feels like I need to be the linchpin here in order for this thing not to run away without me. But really the true like success and freedom in ministry is on transferring that ownership to others, developing leaders to the point where they feel that they can take the weight and they're equipped for that work. And that is a really fruitful experience, or a fulfilling experience, I might say, to have people around you that are doing the things that you set out originally to do. It's really, really an incredible experience. One other thing I want to bring up in this conversation that just before we close up today is the reality that somebody told me this when I got into church planting, and it's been observably true for me, is the reality that team members that join your new church, or this is probably true for campus too, when it's, you know, just an idea or just a concept, when they buy in the beginning, they often have a good experience growing the church. It's hard, but it's amazing. You know, you get really close to people. The work is, you know, invigorating. You work harder than you've worked on anything else, and you get really, really intimate with the people that you're sharing ministry life with and you're doing ministry with. You see the ups and downs. You go through the difficulties and the stresses and the joys. It's like being in war with somebody in some sense, and you go through all of that. But then as the church kind of gets rooted and starts to grow and takes on some, you know, some has some success, those core team members often don't feel quite so vital. They don't have the kind of relationship they once had with the church planting couple. It just kind of isn't the same, and they start to get frustrated and a little bit cagey. And so I was really thankful that somebody told me that was going to come, because it made me be proactive toward loving those who were originally on the team, even as I saw the church starting to gain momentum. But I want you to know, if you're a church planner and you're listening to this today, there's a very good chance that those people you start with will not be as excited about the ministry when you start to get excited about it, when it starts to take root and grow and multiply, you're starting to get really excited. This is the thing you've been working for. They're going to start feeling like, this isn't quite the thing I signed up for. And have you guys, either one of you, experienced that in campus work or in church planting?
Yeah, I mean, the power of story is really compelling. Whether it's a story of something that has already happened somewhere else, or a story of someone that, you know, they've come into contact with in the community, and reaching that person, or it's a story that, this is our golden tomorrow. This is where we want to be. Mm-hmm. Let me paint the picture for you, and let me tell you that story. And you know, doing that in an authentic way, I think is really important. Yeah. But again, mm-hmm. it's tying it back to a specific value. It's not enough to say people matter to God and us, and this is the verse, and it's where, you know, it's in Luke where he leaves the 99 and goes after the one. Like that's good. But you've got to go beyond that. You've got to go a lot deeper. So I do think that the stories that you tell before and immediately after launch, you need to find things that you can bring out and bury down, you know, plant those seeds. The way that you plant those seeds is, again, by celebrating those things that you want to bring into the culture and weeding out the other things that aren't in alignment so that those things can grow. It's great if you buried that seed. If that seed is competing with a bunch of weeds, they're toast.
Right.
They're toast because the weeds have already taken root and they're already choking out. You know, it doesn't even sprout. Like, you have to get rid of all those weeds before it even has a chance to sprout because no light's hitting the ground.
Todd and Jamie, talking to you is always insightful, both of you. Thank you so much for spending time investing in church planters today.
It is so important that your church be prepared with an appropriate response when someone reports some sort of sexual or physical or emotional abuse. We've got a tool that's going to help you do this. It's called Becoming a Church That Cares Well for the Abused. This video course brings together top experts from various fields, and it's designed to help you and your leaders understand and implement the best practices in the event of an abuse scenario at your church or your school or ministry. You can find everything that you need to offer the course. It's totally free, including the videos and a handbook. You can find everything over at newchurches.com.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.